From the Land to Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of August, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalCommerceSearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear from John Jones, soil fertility specialist with Extension and the University of Illinois on campus, about nutrients, particularly nitrogen loss this season and what impact it may or may not have on corn. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast as we wrap up our time together. Eric Snodgrass will be here from Nutrien Ag Solutions on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day, 536 and a half up 3. March up 4 at 551 and a quarter. November beans, $12.88, 20 higher. January, 1302 and 3 quarters, up 19 and 3 quarters. Soft red winter wheat in the December, 23 and a quarter higher at 784. The hard red, 844 and a quarter, up 22 and a quarter. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalCommerceSearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to be back with you, Todd. Another beautiful, happy Friday with the markets rallying.
Indeed, and a big rally. I kind of ask, because we are not at Labor Day next week, and it seems like we frankly ought to be because today's, what, the 28th, but we're not.
Yeah,
it's right. The following weekend. So we have another week left here in the summer. Usually sometimes Labor Day doesn't really change things very often, but there are holiday issues. We do have full moon, I guess. But really, I want to know about this rally, what underpins it, and what might disappear, if anything.
Yeah, what underpins it is the realization, finally, that the funds woke up to the idea that this is a lot like 2022 in terms of the supplies coming out of the Black Sea. We haven't seen that yet with the Strait of Hormuz and the crude oil market, and that's something to be watching for as we get into September, in my opinion, to be able to fuel a greater rally if we're going to have one. But I think the trade and the funds in particular, I boiled it down to clients and subscribers this way, Todd, and this is going to be one of my major points when I'm in Kelowna, Illinois on September 10th with three different farm bureaus doing a speech after dinner. And it really boils down to the 1980s and the similarities there. And it really boils down to today's funds planning and pricing in de-escalation instead of escalation on the geopolitics. That's really the heart and soul for me of this market. And we've lost the grain corridor. We've lost it for 60, 90 days, but it's just now being realized by the funds. And that's kind of where I'm at. And it makes sense that that would be right because the wheat's clearly the leader percentage-wise. I looked at year-to-date numbers this year or this week. We're up around 40, 50% year-to-date in soft red wheat. I think even more than that in hard red. And the corn's up about 20, 25%. And I think the beans are up around 25, 28%, something like that. But wheat's clearly still the leader. Crude's still very, very important to keeping the wheat the leader. But that is what has created this 2022 environment again. So that's one half of your question. The other half of your question, I think we felt a little bit of it on Friday, and it goes back to we're rationing demand now. We had, and I've got a new pun for you, we had the dollar spike, and I'm going to call it a washout because the Fed chairman did his speech at Jackson Hole, and the dollar went straight up, essentially. And it's a renewed worry that interest rates are going to go higher. And that, in the heart and soul, again, of the 1980s is what happened to us back during that time period.
I want to clarify one of the things up front. Grain corridor closed 60 to 90 days. You're saying it's already been closed 60 to 90 days, or we've been 30 or 35 days closed and we've got two more months of it left?
No, I'm saying that we've been closed essentially for about 60 to 90 days or getting to the point where it would be completely shut down. The trade, however, is of the view, or was of the view, we've got the supplies in Ukraine and Russia. They're going to come. Don't worry. It's just a logistical issue. And I think that's what is keeping us held up in both the crude oil and the wheat and wheat until this week. I think it really does go back to the idea that supplies are held up we're not getting back to the supply levels we had before.
Why is it that it's a logistical issue? It was fixed once across the Polish border for Ukraine. Russia could go through Belarus and then into Western Europe, I suppose. But why is that logistical issue having such difficulty?
I think it's because of the sheer damage it's been done, and they have literally taken the gloves off between the two countries. And I saw this week that even by rail, the August Ukrainian grain exports were down 60% from July. This is another big point I think the trade needs to understand a little bit better, historically speaking, and based upon research, not my opinion. This is a market, I think, where the trade assumes not only the de-escalation mindset, but maybe Iran wants high energy prices. Maybe Russia wants high wheat prices. Maybe this is their response to the tariffs and the sanctions and so on and so forth. And it's another way of escalating this conflict economically. And I think the trade maybe needs to get on board with that idea.
Yeah. So what does that tell you about what producers should do?
Right.
Because I think there are two different things, maybe for 26 or crop that's to be harvested, and 27 when there will be a lot more happening.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I think the key now is we're in the supply side sharp rally, demand rationing rally, as we get with my model year still 2010, 2011 in corn and 2011 and 2013 in soybeans. We get into the September time period, then it becomes a lot more important about demand. Why would that be? Well, because then we'll start harvesting our crop. And so we could have supply shocks while we harvest if the yields are lower because we finish out drier than expected, especially on soybeans. But I think between the U.S.-China meeting, the ethanol issue in Canada, that was a big new feature that I had to put on my whiteboard this week because the trade relationship souring so dramatically with Canada, and they take a third of our exports. There's just no getting around it. So those are the demand issues coming, I think.
Okay. Does that tell you producers need to be proactive?
Yes.
As it relates to harvest?
Yeah. You know, I started at Utterbacks back in 1995, and Bob became known for the sell and defend model, and I still use it. I still think it's the best way to go in markets like this, supply, weather, geopolitical driven markets, sell and defend. Started doing it in the wheat, did a little bit in corn beans this week, but watching the technicals, watching to see if Erdogan and Putin get together this weekend and come up with a new plan to open the grain corridor back up, things like that, that would speed me up. But you sell it, you lock in profit, and then you get some longs back in place at a specific time based upon what your parameters are.
What else are you watching?
I think the cattle market is a big deal because the feeders have noticeably gone lower with the corn rally. And so you would expect that domino or that ball of string to unwind eventually. And so when the corn makes a high, I'm looking for the feeders to make a low. Fats should already be making a low based upon supply-demand fundamentals. But here again, like the 1980s, policy has stepped back in the ethanol market with the RINs and the refinery issues of exclusions and also bringing in tariff-free beef. So it just feels a lot like when we were in high school and college.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about that. So you have the president talking about, and I still don't quite understand what he wants farmers to do and ranchers to do as it's related to beef, or even if it's possible on a state-by-state level, because I don't think they'll be big enough to handle it.
You hit something really important, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but you're talking about deregulating to encourage ranchers to create their own stockyards and packing capacity. That takes years, and it takes millions of dollars of investment.
And we shut them all down already.
Right. And I've got, and these are going to be brand new. And so I've got ranchers that are getting out of the business at the end of this year because of what they've had to go through because they're 70. They're not going to deal with this anymore. And so it's just, I think he's just getting, President Trump and his administration is getting some unsound advice right now.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again soon.
Appreciate it, sir.
Mm-hmm. Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. This August, there has been a great deal of talk about the weather in June and its impact on the corn crop, particularly how wet it was and what nitrogen loss might have looked like in that month and how it will impact, if at all, Greenfield. John Jones now joins us. He's an Extension Soil Fertility Specialist and an Assistant Professor of Agronomy here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. John, thank you for taking some time with me today. First, can you tell me about some of this history or weather that we had in June, the rainfall in August as well, and what you and maybe your colleagues in other land-grant universities have been talking about?
Yeah, I think the narrative that we've kind of had a thousand small cuts or a few specific and strategic ways that maybe soil conditions or the crop itself has been hurt a little bit either by weather or when management had to happen is kind of true. Certainly a story that has been fairly consistent, especially in central, maybe moving into northern Illinois, is just the variability within fields is very high. And I would say even from locations around I-70 north of that all the way up. We certainly had towards the middle of June, some inch to near 2-inch or 3-inch rainfalls that really did lead to some elongated saturated conditions. And we saw that within our research. We certainly have seen our treatments in our research, on-farm research and small replicated plot research, where our low nitrogen treatments really started to fire early. They showed nitrogen deficiency very early and held really consistently, and still certainly do when you go out and look at those trials. Even fields where we applied base rates of 50 and 100 pounds, we evaluate soil and the crop status and then look at what's the optimum in-season rate after that. Even those rates in some of our central Illinois sites, kind of moving from Hayworth back over to Champaign, those certainly did show lower soil nitrate levels than we would expect for some of those base rates. So even some that were a little more similar to if there was no nitrogen applied at all. That's not necessarily saying that nitrogen was all lost, but it certainly means that the amount immediately available that we could measure wasn't there for when the crop may have needed it. Kind of think around that V6 to V10 timeframe.
Is it enough lost or not available to cause alarm as it's related to yield?
I don't think it's a reason to cause alarm. And I say that because in scenarios where we were applying 0 to 50 to 100 pounds of nitrogen, I would say those are certainly lower than rates that most farmers are applying through their either single or split applications. I think there is going to be, and we've seen this already, some more advanced firing from the lower canopy. We were headed down to our Perry site and crossing from Springfield over into by Jacksonville into Pike County. Then eventually, we certainly did see some upper canopy, maybe a little disease pressure that was starting to cannibalize its well. And so that doesn't necessarily cause a massive alarm, but what it does make us want to reflect on is the nitrogen strategy that was used. We can't predict necessarily that we're going to have these very strong saturated conditions that last. And we really had a pretty short window, unfortunately, to make a rescue treatment. If you think about when things started to really dry out into kind of early to mid-July, even later in some cases, you're really pushing it on whether you're going to get a return on that nitrogen. And it's not going to be a lot, 20 to 30 pounds of N. Maybe it's with a tall boy sprayer, or maybe it's flown on with the airplane. There's sometimes real risk in if you see an ROI to those rescue, quote unquote, rescue treatments. So I'm not saying there's a cause for large alarm, but I think the variability and the amount of loss that we have seen so far is probably going to lead to some yield numbers that are a little bit lower because of specifically nitrogen loss and the lack of availability.
Is there an issue during grain fill about as it's related to nitrogen, if at all?
Well, the main way that we see nitrogen being used in grain fill is certainly the uptake isn't necessarily starting to peak anymore. We've kind of gone on the downward trend, but we see nitrogen remobilization and use in the plant in that way when we're thinking about the movement of of photosynthates and energy that will eventually be moved to the grain to get fill and kernel weight.
So this is nitrogen already in the plant.
Correct.
As opposed to nitrogen that's trying. So then it's about the canopy and canopy color at that point?
Yeah, the goal is to really, before you start to head into the point where we start to really fill kernels, we want to have a full canopy that, as you mentioned, is dark green from as low as we can get it in the canopy, because there is a lot of N that's in that plant that gets remobilized or at least used. And so in that case, it's important to be at a good starting point when we start to can be considered about considering a grain fill period. If the plant is deficient at that point, certainly there's some N that can still take up, still be taken up. It's going to really track how we see water movement and uptake at this time. But if it's the case where the plant is already starved before that, that again, kind of moving out to R2, R3, R4 time period, then I'd be a little concerned that our grain fill is going to be suspect to some less than ideal conditions because of N deficiency. And we're seeing that in some of our trials.
But for the bulk of the corn crop in the state, you would feel satisfied that it's fine?
Yeah, I think if we use the on average term, I don't necessarily think that there were these massive events that are going to be pushing N, major N losses, but the variability is probably what's going to catch some of these averages and bring them down a few points or a few percentages. And so that I wouldn't be very surprised on based on how the crop has been developing so far, especially how fast some of the firing has happened.
Thank you very much, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
John Jones is a crop scientist and an extension soil fertility specialist based on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's a meteorologist with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Dagerville. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on again, Todd.
Let's start with the month of August and kind of look back. Much of it has been really nice, frankly, or at least it feels like. Maybe it's just that the last week and a half has been really nice. Some of it was really hot, too. And wet. Oh, my gosh, really wet.
Well, I think that's an important thing to bring up because we talked about this the last couple of weeks. We had incredibly wet conditions in June. Remember how wet June was? July, not so much. We had rain, but it wasn't as heavy as in June. And then we get into that early August timeframe, and we had these record rains that moved across, you know, really from eastern Iowa all the way over to Ohio and everywhere in between. And that, of course, hit us in Indiana pretty hard. And my big question, Todd, as we're starting to just get a better and better idea of the size of this crop is, Do we have a nitrogen problem on our hands? Is that what we're seeing when we're getting all these, you know, interesting cases of tip back and poor pollination? I think the pollination may have been from just some untimely heat, but I'm curious about that. And I'm also curious, I'm hearing a lot of reports from guys that are saying in some fields there's some significant stalk rot and crown rot, and they're having some difficulty, I think, with the standability of the crop going forward. Are you hearing anything like that?
Okay, so the standability issue probably started because it was so darn wet that they didn't have to put roots down. There were some thoughts early on about that one, and we just finished up, prior to the time I called you, on the radio, that is, with an interview that John Jones had done with me yesterday, as it was related to inavailability. One of the things that he mentioned was that, yes, there are some places, certainly, that there were some nutrient loss. No real alarm bells from any of his colleagues. I think that's across the whole of the Midwest, certainly in Illinois. But that if your canopy for the corn remains green, probably not that big a deal, mostly because the nitrogen translocates from the leaves and other places in the plant to grain fill. It's not pulling it out of the soil.
Okay.
So even if there were losses, it can do it, But mostly it's using what's stored up in the plant. So that's where he told us about just a few moments ago.
Oh, well, I will never claim to know much about plant physiology. But I mean, I was talking to Matt Bennett last week. We're at an event together in Bloomington. And again, his comments were flying over the crop. The color looks different than what he was expecting. And so, I don't know, I think it was worthwhile bringing up. But Todd, the second part to this is, you know, August has come in, for the most part, cool, right? We've had some really, I mean, did you sleep at all with the windows open the last week or so?
We have, yes.
Yeah. So this is kind of great August weather for the crop. Heat is a problem in August, and we're not really putting heat on it, but that is going to change into September. So the big Texas Ridge, which has been just oppressive across parts of the South. I mean, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas have seen some of the most oppressive heat that I can remember for such a long time. Well, some of that heat's going to finally leak out, get across the river, get over to Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. And so we're going to warm up into next week. Temperatures are probably going to go back into the 90s again. And thankfully, you know, it's September heat and not July heat. So it's a little different. We're later in the year. But with that, we're expecting some drier weather. That does not mean we cannot still get rogue thunderstorms, but overall, it's a drier pattern for us going into the next couple of weeks.
And then let's talk about the big thing, which is not here. Super El Nino.
Yeah.
I guess it is here, but really, I Super El Nino and maybe the impacts. You pick the geography across the planet you want to talk about.
Yeah, let's start in the U.S. first. So what we do expect out of this, and you and I have talked extensively about it, is the risk of having a wetter than average harvest season. And we're already beginning to see the effects of this El Nino in the next couple of weeks with increasing the flow into the western United States. That's what tends to make it wetter for us during harvest. There's just a lot of flow coming across, you know, the mid-latitudes where we live. So it tilts the odds in that favor. Where the El Nino will be most interesting to watch as it, I mean, it's already stronger at this point in the year than like the big one in 1997, the big one in 82, and the huge one in 2015. It's already stronger than those were at their peak, okay? So as this one comes in, we just would like to know, is this going to be a problem for South America? Personally, I think the issue is going to be in southern Brazil, keeping things way too wet too long, which could impact planting. In northern Brazil, some of our forecast models are even starting to hint at bringing in some moisture to like Mato Grosso do Sul, Goiás. Now, they're not going to go on the first moisture. They're going to have to wait until they get further into September and October for real rains to return. But the question will be, are there going to be planting delays in Brazil? And I think the way we've seen the markets respond to some yield stuff going on in the U.S., plus just the global demand picture, South America could really be a compounding factor if they have problems going forward. So, Todd, we will have a lot to talk about in the coming months.
All right. Hey, thanks much. And we'll talk with you again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Todd.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Ackerbull joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. If you can stay with us on our home station, you'll hear a portion of our Commodity Week program. It'll also air on many of these radio stations over the weekend, and it's up in its entirety online right now at willag.org. That's willag.org. It's a good program, and we introduce Arlen Suderman's colleague, Mike Castle, who's been there at StoneX for some time, and we'll be picking up some of his duties as Arlen retires at the end of the year. You want to hear from Mike, too, about StoneX's numbers for yield and when they're calculated and how they're figured and when that next release will come in September. You can do that again on Commodity Week online, willag.org, right here on our home station coming up next, and many of these radio stations over the weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.